All right, it's the Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Ennis alongside Arash Madani for the entire week.
Yeah.
How's it going, Arash?
I'm doing great, man. What's happening?
Nothing much. What a week to have you in. By the way, yeah, you're always a busy man, but this week you're covering the Grey Cup all week.
Yes.
So we got the man to have in studio during Grey Cup week. And you're also, I guess, kind of an investigative Twitterer as well. We'll get to that as to what exactly went down at BMO Field after the game.
After the game.
And it's Lou Marsh week as well.
Yes.
And you were a voter of the Lou Marsh Award on Wednesday. So we'll do plenty of that this week. It's truly the Arash Madani week. If ever there was one of the 52 weeks that we could declare Arash Madani week, this would be it.
And as a lifelong, hopeless, pathetic Minnesota Vikings fan, I walk in here the day after the winless
first victory of the year on the line. Goff's got it. Back, looks, throws, and
yes!
Caught! Touchdown, Detroit Lions! They did it! Amon-Ra St. Brown in the receiving end! Oh, they're rushing the field!
Pandemonium!
I can't believe you brought it up.
Christmas in Michigan!
I was going to ease into it. You know, we've never done a full show together. I wasn't going to come out of the gate strong with your guy, Kirk Cousins, putting up another great statistical performance.
Great statistical performance.
Oh, spectacular. But dropping to 26-1 when trailing headed into the fourth quarter.
Isn't that amazing?
It's pretty remarkable.
Because there's so much nonsense said about, well, Cousins' numbers and this and that. That, to me, is the number. When you think about winning, isn't that what it's about as a quarterback, as a $40 million quarterback? Yeah, 26-1 with the Vikings when trailing entering the fourth quarter.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
We don't like that, Kirk.
Okay, so now that you've decided that you want to rip off the Band-Aid that is your Minnesota Vikings to start the show, because there was many different ways we could start the show, many less painful ways for you personally. But now that we're here, let's talk about your team. They're still in the mix, though, in this insane NFC.
No, they're not.
They're still in the mix in this insane NFC.
No.
They're still in the mix. They're still in the mix. They have all the talent in the world.
Do they?
Yeah, they have some.
What?
Adam Thielen's pretty good.
Bad ankle.
Yeah, but he might be good enough to go on Thursday. They have a short week this week as well.
He probably won't play Thursday. Dalvin's done.
Yeah.
With the shoulder chest thing. They have Justin Jefferson, who's out of this world.
Yep.
And so they decided, hey, let's just not target him for an entire quarter. Oh, okay, guys. Nice. That's real smart. Yeah.
No, that seems bad. Mike Zimmer seems to be, like, his seat is scorching hot. Now, is the
overall... He's gone at the end of the year.
Again, the overall record is good. Like, he and Kirk Cousins, they share, they're brothers in arms in, like, overall record, you know, regular season record, a couple of playoff victories as well, but 54-1, 2-3 in the playoffs. There's no point in firing him during the season, though, is there? Like, again, they're still alive in that NFC. Arash, is there any point to just doing a Vancouver Canucks blow it up, which we will get to today as well?
I don't think it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So this is year 8 for Zimmer.
Mm-hmm.
2 playoff wins. This coming into this year, it was put up or shut up time. And obviously they're not going to the playoffs.
They're shutting up.
Yeah, this is going to be it. It's over. They tied their... hopes. They tied the entire franchise, the hands of the arm of Kirk Cousins, and it's blown up in their face. I was wondering if Zimmer was going to get fired yesterday, but it's a Thursday night game against Pittsburgh. And then at that point, you're in the middle of December, so you just kind of see it through because it's not going to change. And who are you going to put in there? You know, the co-defensive coordinator is his son. So I just think they roll with it.
Yeah, the only reason to do it would be if you have somebody in mind. You're bringing John Gruden back. You have somebody out there who you would like to jump the queue on that Black Monday and get ahead of the crowd and hire that person. But yeah, you're not And also, I think you almost have to. I know you don't want to discuss the potential playoff possibilities of this Vikings team, but they are just a game out of the playoffs, and again, a very weird NFC. So I think you got to be officially eliminated from playoff contention.
They just lost to the Lions.
That's bad. Hey, the Bills lost to the Jaguars. It happens. It's the NFL. By the way, are you enjoying this season? Like, just in an overall sense, because this is an insane NFL season. And this is not dissimilar, I guess, in an overall sense from other NFL seasons, but it feels just like more so. It feels like there is just nobody at the top of the pile. The murky middle is as murky as it's ever been before. Are you enjoying that aspect of this NFL season?
I am. I'm enjoying the NFL season. I'm not enjoying the Vikings season.
Yeah.
Who's good?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Forget who the elite teams are.
Yeah.
Like, I thought Baltimore was elite.
No.
Lose to Miami on a Thursday night. Okay, you say aberration, but then what was that against Pittsburgh yesterday?
What is Lamar Jackson over the last month?
Who's Josh Allen over the last month?
It's a great question.
The previous month, you're saying to yourself, okay, Casey will figure it out. Then for a month they were dreadful, but now it looks like Kansas City might have figured it out, kind of. But I'm still not sure I'm sold on them. I want to be sold on the Colts, but am I really going all in on Indy? I don't think so. I thought the Rams were the team. They have me wondering.
Yep. The team that's funny, Tampa Bay. I know, Tampa Bay, and then your next team is going to be the Packers, and you know the last team anyone ever mentions is the team with the actual best record in the NFL, and that's the Arizona Cardinals, and they've been doing it without Kyler Murray until he came back yesterday and looked good again, and like he doesn't get mentioned in the MVP conversation. He can't because he missed a month, but that team is 10-2 and atop this NFC.
And without DeAndre Hopkins for a lot of it, too.
Yep. Well, yeah, he was gone. Yeah, he and Kyler were out for, what, 3-4 weeks? And they're 10-2, and they're atop the NFC, and the defense has played well. And all season long, preseason, we bigged up that division, which was, we didn't know Seattle would stink.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they kind of, like, the team with the best record in the entire NFL, I think it's mentioned last when you talk about the good teams in the NFL.
It's wild. And to do it in that division, significant. But also, and I really believe this, and I know I'm almost contradicting myself because we just talked about Tampa and Green Bay being the best teams and they're paying their quarterback a lot of money. I am of the belief that you succeed in the NFL when you find a young quarterback in his first 5 years who can ball for you.
For sure.
And you look at what Buffalo did last year, and you look at what KC did in the early days of Mahomes. It kind of lives up to that. You're not paying your quarterback $35, $40 million. You have all this money to spend everywhere else, and Arizona spent it all over their defense.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know how the Rams are doing it. They must be deferring so much money down the road.
They keep adding contracts to that cap sheet. It makes no sense.
Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald and Von Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And Cooper, and Matt Stafford, and Robert Woods. But who, if you're buying stock in a team that you think you're going to get some kind of value on to sell, come late January, early February, who is it?
It might be too late. I might have missed the market on the Patriots, but the Patriots are my team, man. Like, how can you not look at what the Patriots have done? And yes, it was a lot of paper tigers that they went through earlier on. But they're starting to build a resume here. I mean, tonight could tell us a lot.
The Patriots are the one seed in the AFC right now.
Yes. Yes, and that'll either be confirmed by beating Buffalo tonight or I guess the Titans would be back on top if they lose. And there would be like another, like, I think it's like a 5-way tie for the best record in the AFC if they lose.
But think about that.
Yeah.
And look at Buffalo. What does Buffalo have to deal with right now? They got to deal with Belichick, then Brady, then Belichick again.
Correct.
And, you know, going back to the previous comment about you don't pay your quarterback a lot and you invest in your defense a lot, the Patriots, don't forget, and I know we're going to tee up this Monday night or tonight, but the Patriots had a bunch of dudes on defense. Four guys last year, including Dante Hightower, opt out.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get hit for an entire year.
Yeah.
They're coming back in fresh. Judon, like, I cannot believe Baltimore lets him go. He's just been an absolute beast. Yes, Mac Jones has been solid. Yes, Mac Jones has been better than solid. But New England's here because of their defense.
Mm-hmm.
New England's, and I'm...
And their head coach.
And so the conditions in Buffalo tonight look like a hurricane is
horrible.
Coming through. And that's obviously not conducive to throwing the football. And it looks like the Bills' only running back is their quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really intrigued to see what Belichick has in store for
him. Oh, yeah. The last time they played this type of, hey, you got to run the ball, team's going to run it down your throat type of game, it was against the Colts, and that didn't go all that well. And it was in Buffalo, and it was in adverse conditions. Are you a Manning Cast guy? Because tonight is a Manning Cast game. I got to say, though, if it's a game that I'm really interested in, like tonight, I think I steer away from the Manning Cast.
I know what you mean. I flip it back and forth. Depends on the game.
Mm-hmm.
Usually the Monday nighters are dreadful.
Yeah, that's why you need the Manning Cast, but not tonight. I feel like it's like overkill. Although David Letterman's the debut guest tonight.
See, Letterman doesn't do it for me, but Brady coming on, that did it for me.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm probably going to tune in when Aqib Talib comes on, just because I just want Aqib Talib just hit play and let Aqib Talib go.
Yeah.
I listen to Joe Buck enough because you and I both watch a lot of baseball, too.
Yeah.
But the Brady, of all the Manning Cast things, the Brady one was so interesting because they're messing around and Eli just wants to have a good time. But then when it gets into a big football situation, it was so interesting just watching Peyton and Tom kind of morph into just their eyes darting all over the screen as they're watching and just talking out loud on what they're watching.
Oh, yeah. That was electric.
That was really neat.
I don't understand why they can't get I understand why Tom Brady can't get in the same room, but why Eli and Peyton can't get in the same room. I think that would be helpful if they were just in the same room.
Probably because Eli just wants to be at home.
I guess. Anyways, I won't be doing Manning Cast tonight. I mentioned it. Your Twitter feed is the place to go to break down the breakdown. The perhaps mental breakdown at the end of the Tiger Cats' victory over the Argonauts in the CFL's East Final. Going to play a home Grey Cup game on Sunday. What happened, man? That is crazy. What have you talked to people? Like, is there going to be fallout here? Is there going to be like criminal charges? What is the latest on what happened after the game? And if people haven't seen it, you should go to Arash Madani's Twitter account to check out the latest video. But there's Tiger Cats fans and there is helmeted football players engaged in physical conduct, and in fact there is one suited and tied individual who may have ties to the Toronto Argonauts who also gets involved. What happened?
A star player in the league, I'm just looking at the text he sent me this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, could this be any more embarrassing? The Purifoy incident still played. Purifoy is a defensive back for Saskatchewan. There was a skirmish at a restaurant in Regina after the semifinal. Ends up being held overnight by authorities, still played the next day. So this is what the player sent to me. Could it be any more embarrassing? The Purifoy incident, Argos players fighting fans, and talking about the vice president of player personnel. And there are videos that have emerged of the vice president of player personnel of the Toronto Argonauts getting into it with fans at the end of the game along the concourse. And if you listen quite intently, you hear what sounds to be something that sounds a lot like a slur. And you see some people swinging.
Yeah. You definitely see that.
In a suit. And the league and the Argos are saying they're doing an investigation. CSI Toronto. Like, I mean, what hit play on the video?
Yeah.
But it's bad. It's really bad. It's a terrible look. They finally had themselves a pretty packed house. They're up a couple of scores at the half. It all came apart. I get it. Emotions are high, etc. A lot of fans there probably were overserved. Sure. Don't do that.
No, don't do that. I mean, there's other embarrassments too. I mean, there's McLeod Bethel Thompson pushing a cameraman at the end of the game, and that coming off of the stupidness of COVID protocol and him being at the Raptor game, and then the lessening of the quarantine time and the team's inability to understand what exactly was happening there. Is this an Argos problem? Is this, like, it feels like
it's an Argos problem.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad you said it, because it feels like an Argos problem.
I mean, the league office has nothing to do with that. The league office has nothing to do with skirmish going on with fans and Argos players. The league office has nothing to do with a member of the Argos front office going at fans there. The league office should get involved. Mm-hmm. The league office should get involved with what happened at the end of the game on the field with the handheld cameraman and Argo player/players. But here it is, Grey Cup week on a Monday, and this is what is taking up the oxygen on CFL Twitter and in our conversation about this. Mm-hmm. Not about Winnipeg and Hamilton, not about the rematch, not about the Tiger Cats late in the second quarter with a quarterback change. Yeah. And I think their backup quarterback is going to start the Grey Cup. It's this, because it's the story. And there was their head coach, Ryan Dinwiddie, today at the podium having to answer to it. There was Pinball Clements having to answer to it. There was their quarterback, McLeod Bethel Thompson, who didn't speak yesterday after a playoff defeat, answering to it.
Yeah. Yeah, you think the league is happy? Well, I know they're happy from a ticket selling standpoint that the Ticats are into this game, but and of course, CFL playoff games do a pretty decent television number. So despite the fact that it feels like there's not a ton of fan attention on the Argos in this city, that East final did okay in the ratings. But is the CFL, like, if they had their druthers, they would have chosen the Tiger Cats to be the representative from the East?
Yes, because that's how you sell out the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
They announced sell. You can still get tickets on Ticketmaster, but that's how you sell out. Probably the only way you're going to sell out the stadium. And also, quite frankly, Ben, I know Toronto had home field advantage. The Tiger Cats and the Blue Bombers were the two best teams in the league all year.
Yeah.
Winnipeg, wire to wire, was by far the best. It's going to be a great scene at Tim Hortons Field on Sunday. They're at home. Hopefully the weather's going to be kind of all right. A little bit of snow in mid-December. Why not? And it's two coaches who know each other well. They were teammates. They were coaches together. One's a defensive-minded guy. One's a special teams-minded guy. And it should be a very good football game. It should be a very good scene. It's just, can they get to Sunday without more of a fiasco? Because last week was littered with them.
Yeah.
So can they, like, go 72 hours without a five-alarm bell fire this week? That might be their biggest win of all.
They should just lock everybody into their hotel rooms. I guess Hamilton, they're at home, so there's no hotel rooms for them. They should force them into a hotel room and then lock the door.
Yeah, I think they will. The East team has the East hotel. The West team has the West hotel.
All right. Well, you'll be covering it all week. So, I mean, I guess
you should have a couple of good stories as the week goes on about, you know.
So, yeah, you want there not to be another fiasco, but like another fiasco might be interesting for one Arash Madani to report on.
Yeah. But like, you know, like, look, I take my shots at the stupidity of the CFL. I point out just, you know, the ridiculousness of it. But yesterday was really bad.
Yeah.
Yesterday's really, really, really bad. And people on Twitter saying, okay, well, a Hamilton fan spat on somebody. Okay. That's terrible.
Yes.
You should not be climbing onto the concourse and swinging at people.
Yeah.
If you're a player. If you're in a suit.
Oh, yeah.
If you're a vice president of a professional football franchise.
Uh-huh.
You can't be doing what it looked like you were doing on video.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty
saying
good rule.
Saying what you were saying on video. What happened to the whole diversity is strength stuff. but they're going to do an investigation.
All right. I can't wait to see the result of that.
I can't wait to see who's spearheading the conversation, the investigation.
All right.
Doink the clown.
Okay, again, if this interests you, you got to stay on top of Arash Madani's Twitter account and pay attention to Sportsnet Central all week as Arash Madani gets you set for the Grey Cup in Hamilton. You mentioned tickets. You know what's weird? Like the Leafs, I know they've dropped two in a row and they're a little shorthanded now. They got no Mitch Marner and Rasmus Sandin is going to be out for a while with the knee thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're having trouble still selling the building out at Scotiabank Arena, or at least on the secondary ticket market, there are tickets available for less than face. And at the beginning of the season, it kind of made sense because you're like, okay, well, one, it's going to take people some time to get back into the mindset of going to see live sporting events and being around 20,000 strangers. Understood.
Fair.
And secondarily, it was, well, there's good. Who cares about the regular season when it comes to this Leafs team? And they started off so horribly that only fed into that. They were, before these two games dropped and picking up a single point on the weekend, they were the best team in the National Hockey League from a points perspective going into the weekend. And still, it has not been the hot ticket that it was for the last 50 years. Just curious to me, Arash. I wonder if that's still like a pandemic thing or whether that does speak to the changing sports fan taste in this city.
I think it is a bit of column B.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the biggest knock on the Leafs in arena experience? It's a bunch of suits, bunch of corporates.
Mm-hmm.
People are coming in, they're not paying attention to the game, they're doing business, they've just spent the last 2-3 hours drinking wine, they don't care what's happening on the ice, they
and
just want to be there, see and be seen as they have their dynamite roles.
Mm-hmm. Overrated role. Bad role, in fact, I would argue.
Oh.
No. You got spicy salmon.
Bad role. Have you been down to the financial district in the last 12 months? You could shoot a cannon through there.
Mm.
Nobody's there.
Mm.
The majority of the people who are occupying the big seats at Scotiabank Arena aren't downtown anymore. I really believe that a lot of this, when you kind of dissect where the power brokers who sit in those seats, where their postal codes are, what their area codes are, they're not the ones living in condos downtown. They're living way out. And if they're not coming downtown, if they're not doing the whole thing, if they're not entertaining clients, if they're not taking this and that, if that's not existing,
yeah,
the spin-off effect of that, I'd love to. I think if you took the 15 or 20 go-to after-work places in and around King and Bay, what those places look like happy hour now compared to happy hour 2018 on the 6th of December or whenever the next Leafs home date is, I bet you it's a fraction. And I think that plays into what's going on in that arena.
No, it's a great point because, yeah, I host a radio show and I've only been coming back to work. Like I started coming back in the middle of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of, listen, Stephen Brunt came, he never left, right? There were some people though that didn't think they would ever come back and started coming back. But if you're working in the financial district, if you have a job in which it's much easier to work at home, I guess it's true that
like what's the path right now?
I don't know.
Empty,
are you talking about like,
barren.
Okay. You're talking about under the city.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's all part of that whole deal, right? Because it's all connected to Union Station. Like so much of what was happening at Scotiabank Arena was an extension of the business happening in the financial district.
Mm.
Well, now the business of the financial district is happening from home offices.
Yeah.
People aren't coming. People are still at home. And there are, if that returns to somewhat of what it used to be, I think you're going to see the uptick in the hockey arena. But until then, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and who knows when that'll be. if you pay attention to the news, you get varying opinions on exactly that. But yeah, fingers crossed that we get close to, or we are closer to normal. Hey, listen, I'm doing a radio show in the same studio as another human being. That's a step in the right direction, Arash.
Hear, hear.
All right. When we come back, something finally had to give in Vancouver. The Canucks totally cleaning house, and the Flyers firing their head coach today. Plus, Jason Spezza is going to learn his fate soon. He was offered an in-person hearing with the NHL after his hit on Neil Pionk last night. Let's talk to Frank Saravelli, president of Daily Faceoff, next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Arash Madani, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. That's Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis and Arash Madani and Stephen Brunt on vacation this week. It seems that throwing a jersey on the ice is a good way to force change in your organization. As the Vancouver Canucks totally cleaning house after those horrible Canucks jerseys. And they are horrible with the Orca Whale ends up on the ice in Vancouver. Let's talk to Frank Saravelli, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. How's it going, Frank?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
I'm all right. Like, there is some seriousness to what I'm saying, at least in my opinion. Do you think the fans played a role in the timing around this move in Vancouver?
I think that's part of it. I think you watch a loss like that on Saturday night and you think that something has to give. It's not just the fan reaction. It's not just the jersey on the ice or the fire Benning chants or the sell the team chants. I think it's also the body language of the players. Listless, lacking energy, all those things, you know, you point to it and you say, this isn't an environment that we want our, you know, multi-million dollar asset to be skating in. So try and do whatever you can to change it.
So ultimately, this is the owner. Does the owner handpick the coach then, Frank? Is that how this shook down?
Yeah, Arash, I'm interested to learn the answer to that question because,
like, who's left? It really,
right? Yeah, I mean, it's there. He's so Francesco Aquilini is going to address the media in the next hour and 45 minutes or so here, and that's one of the significant questions on my list is how does the owner end up picking the head coach? How does that work? Mm-hmm. You know, we never see anything like that. I shouldn't say never, but rarely see anything like that in the NHL. And why did he feel like he was in the position to make that decision and what's best for hockey ops moving forward?
Is it possible they just wanted to make sure that Bruce Boudreaux wasn't going to get away? Was the market for Bruce Boudreaux, was it a big market for him? Was there the possibility that if they didn't act, they would have not been able to land the guy that they wanted?
I don't think so. I've seen that going around on social media, and Bruce Boudreaux has been out of work for a little while. He's actually not being paid. He's not under contract with anyone, which for an NHL coach, you know that it's been a while, considering that it feels like most guys end up getting fired with somewhat significant term left. And I don't think even if they foresaw the Flyers, you know, making a move, which they did, you know, just 8-12 hours later, that Bruce Boudreaux would have been at the top of the Flyers list. I mean, they're taking it, slow on their end in terms of what their next move is. So I don't think that was it. I think they honestly, my sense is that the Vancouver Canucks have a pretty specific game plan in mind in terms of the reason they targeted Bruce Boudreaux, the reason why they brought him in now. One is to try and get Elias Pettersson going and the Vancouver Canucks stars. That's the big, question mark that exists with this team throughout the rest of the season. If there's not a lot to play for on the ice in terms of making the playoffs, well, then you need to answer some pretty significant questions for your team. And then the other part is, you know, he's available and he's at 66, soon to be 67 years old, you know, isn't going to, you know, try and force a 5-year deal out of you. He's comfortable signing for a year and a half to come in, try and right the ship, and then see what happens after the fact.
Yeah, and Frank, that's the interesting part to me, that, what is he, about a month away from his 67th birthday? Bruce has been there, done that. He knows the NHL. He knows how this whole thing works. I just don't get the sense that he's going to, even for a year and a half, just sign up for a gig unless he knows, has a real good idea of what he's getting himself into. And what I mean by that is that he's not just going to be one of those lame duck coaches who's going to come in and not have an idea of who the next GM is going to be, and that he'd be have either a relationship with that GM or be in lockstep with that GM. Like, I get the sense, yeah, they're keeping the kind of, what is it, Stan Smeal and a couple others are coming in right now, but I have to believe that by early 2022, there's going to be a general manager in place for the Canucks to move forward, A, and that at least there's some kind of rapport between Boudreau and the GM. What do you think?
I don't know that I buy that, because, yes, you know, Bruce Boudreau would like to have some sort of indication or idea as to who's going to be at the post. They're not able to make that promise or guarantee to him. They don't know who they're hiring yet, unless this is some elaborate play that they're talking to someone that they just weren't able to get a deal done at the last minute. I don't believe that's the case. I believe that they have a search underway, that they'd, you know, like to have this process unfold in due time. And with Bruce Boudreau, he's a competitive guy. He's made a pile of money in his career. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he needs to work again. I had him on my podcast maybe 6 months ago, and all he talked about was just wanting another chance, another crack, another opportunity. And I think in a lot of ways, this opportunity in Vancouver excites him because, one, he hasn't coached in a Canadian market, and I know that he wanted to do that and check that box. And the other part is, I don't think the Vancouver Canucks are as bad as they've shown this year. I think they're a better team on paper, has more to give. They have some significant flaws and weaknesses, but by and large, this team shouldn't be buried at the bottom of the Pacific. They should be, you know, at the very least in contention for a playoff spot or in the conversation. And I think he sees it as an opportunity of, yes, you're not going to guarantee or give me a lot now, but if I come in and do what I think this team can do and what I know that I'm capable of in terms of systems changes and things like that, that he's able to turn this team around and be in a position to cash in on a longer-term deal and be able to do more with whoever is hired because of what he's able to show.
Yeah, and if he doesn't have success there, that would be like a first for him in his National Hockey League career. He's had
pretty
tremendous regular season success, at least in all of his stops along the way. So, I mean,
what's another $5 million that you add to the bank guaranteed for the next year and a half's worth of work?
Not too shabby. I understand it from his perspective. And you said it, that the Canucks, we're only a couple of years removed from them being close to a Western Conference finals appearance. I understand that was a weird season, a weird postseason too, but yeah, there does appear to be a significant amount of talent. This feels like a good job. I mean, there's only 32 GM posts in the National Hockey League, so they're all good, but this feels like one, if you're an executive out there, that you'd be, you know, jumping over people to throw your name into the hat for.
Yes and no, because I think a rash hit on the big question mark that surrounds this job is, what role does the owner have in day-to-day operations? I mean, this has been an ongoing trend surrounding the Vancouver Canucks for a long time. You talk to people that work in the organization, they say it's not odd for Francesco Aquilini to appear in the dressing room between periods every now and again over the course of a season. You know, you see the ownership in this case step in and make the decision to hire the next head coach. Mm-hmm. Those are pretty odd circumstances in terms of how a hockey team is run on a day-to-day basis. And so I think it's one of two things if you're a general manager that's interested in going to Vancouver. One, you either come in knowing that you have the autonomy and you set or try to set what you believe is ownership straight in what you need to do your job, or two, you're handed such a pile of cash that you're willing to take whatever comes along with the role and the job. And so I think, you know, a lot of people want to jump all over Jim Benning and the job that he did in Vancouver. And there were certainly parts of it that, you know, come out in the end that are ugly. You know, the way that the right side of this defense shaped up, their salary cap picture moving forward, their lack of real prospects, meaningful prospects and draft picks moving forward. Like, those are all significant issues. But I'd love to be able to grade Jim Benning on what it would have been like had he not worked in an organization that meddled like this. So I think to pull back the curtain a little bit and to have people speak honestly, truly, and freely about the situation and what it was like there, I wonder if we'd have a different perspective and view on it.
So that's an interesting, like, this is the can of worms here that, you know, Frank, I've worked a bunch of different sports, and almost unanimously you talk to coaches or management, even players, and they'll tell you, yeah, talent wins, but more than anything else, good ownership wins. You know, we're sitting here in the studio. I'm watching my pathetic Vikings lose to the winless Detroit Lions yesterday.
Also pathetic. Yeah. Also pathetic Lions.
And you think about the ownership of the Detroit Lions, and you think about great, then on the flip side of that, you think about great owners all across sport. And you hear a lot of murmurs coming out of Vancouver about the meddling of the Aquilini family and what they do over there. And you wonder how much of it is the Jerry Jones syndrome of wanting to be too involved and, you know, have input on draft picks or free agent signings. I mean, obviously owners have a say and they have to be the ones to write the check. But what's your, you know, is that an appealing job for an A-list coach or an A-list general manager in Vancouver based on what they may have to work with on a day-to-day basis at the ownership level?
I guess we'll find out. I mean,
yeah,
that's the true answer, is that I think there's interest. I think that people think that that team can be better than what it's shown, that they think that there's some valuable building blocks that Jim Benning put in place, and a foundational piece in Thatcher Demko in net, and, you know, potential all-world player in Quinn Hughes on the back end, who still has a lot of room to grow in his game, and Elias Pettersson and the guys up front, Bo Horvat, et cetera, that I think are really intriguing and interesting. But I do think that there's some trepidation on that front that, you know, it needs to be one or the other. It's that, you know, going in eyes wide open, or, you know, you're just willing to live with whatever happens because they're paying you $5 or $6 million a year, and you sign a 5-year deal for $30 million and it's a life-changing amount of money for you.
I'd do it. That's just me. All right. So we just got news that Neil Pionk has been suspended a couple of games for that hit on Rasmus Sandin yesterday, the knee on knee. Jason Spezza was offered an in-person hearing, so that means they can go more than five, I guess, Frank. Like, when that happens, aren't you getting at least five?
Not always. I mean, it depends on the circumstance and basically how Jason Spezza and the Maple Leafs argue it. But more often than not, yes, the Department of Player Safety has an idea when they go in, you know, what kind of range they're looking at in order for the crime that they saw. So in this case, seemed to be some pretty clear intent on Jason Spezza's part. You know, watching that entire sequence unravel, I'd have to think that the situation would have been diffused had the referee simply called a penalty on Pionk for the kneeing, that, you know, we'd be in a different spot.
Should that play a factor?
Should it play a factor? No. Oh. Because at the end of the day, Jason Spezza is responsible for his own actions. And when you see a guy falling to the ice and you line him up, knowing that he's going down like that, and you want to try and run him over and get retribution for the hit that he just had on one of your teammates, then no, it shouldn't play a factor.
Who's the next coach in Philly, Frank?
Well, the Flyers are going to take their time. They really, you know, they're not in a rush. Mike Yeo has parts of 5 seasons worth of experience working with Chuck Fletcher in Minnesota, and the Flyers want to – I don't even know that they're going to open their process right away. I think they want to see what happens under Mike Yeo. if they ultimately even need to make a hire. Maybe they think that he's a guy that could run that team for a while. There seems to be two different candidates that have popped up, you know, certainly in conversation or in chatter. One was John Tortorella. For my money, I'd say that if the Flyers do go outside externally and hire someone, that Rick Tocchet will get a long look there, formerly of Arizona, stepping away after his contract expired last season, has waited for the right opportunity and job, had a significant opportunity to work in the NHL as an assistant this year, passed on that, and just a dyed-in-the-wool Flyer, someone that would actually get that fan base excited and riled up and interested in watching their team again, because it's been a while since the Flyers have had something to cheer about.
Before I let you go, Robin Lehner pulls out of the Olympics, citing some mm-hmm. mental health issues with that, and specifically citing the potential 3-week quarantine in China if you test positive for COVID. Obviously sympathize with him. I would be thinking probably along the same lines as well if I was in his position. Do you have any sense that this could be the start of a wave of players voluntarily taking themselves out?
Well, I think the conversation has been going on for a little while behind the scenes. I've, you know, privately spoken to a couple players that have expressed the same trepidation and fears. They're not willing to put their name on it or say more. And I think for the greater good, they've sort of tried to stay quiet because they know how much this means to other players. I can only tell you from a personal standpoint, I'm planning on going to Beijing myself. Mm-hmm. And it's actually been weighing on me a little bit as well. Just saying, obviously I'm not an athlete. Don't even look like one, but you know, moving forward, the idea of being taken out of your hotel room if you test positive and sent to a Chinese isolation facility, like, doesn't rank high up on the list of things that I'd like to do in my life. So, you know, certainly going to take consideration for anyone who steps foot on a plane, knowing that, you know, those are the potential circumstances and ramifications, let alone for a multi-million-dollar athlete who, you know, you test positive the day before the gold medal game, your team's going to be playing for 3 weeks without you while you're stuck there in China. So certainly has created some angst and an issue for players. I think ultimately more than not would want to go. It's just a matter of what the NHL's climate looks like between now and then.
Can you imagine if the day after the Olympic semifinal,
mm-hmm.
COVID just runs rampant through the hockey arena?
Yeah, that would be bad.
And obviously from a health standpoint, you want everybody to be okay, but what that would do to the NHL, what that would do to their schedule and their teams, and then those guys are have to be, as Frank said, quarantined for 3 weeks.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
And then they'd have to get right back into playing? Disaster.
Yeah. You know, one of the things when you look at the Olympic playbook is it explains exactly what you need to do. And one of, you know, they don't give you many details on what the isolation facility looks like, other than that there is, quote, Wi-Fi and, quote, mental health support available.
Oh, good.
And I was like, why would you need mental health support? Oh, that's right. Okay.
Oh, my God.
So, it's certainly eye-opening. I choose to think positively and think that, you know, perhaps with a booster, maybe in my near future that, I don't know. I just tell myself that my chances would be pretty low.
Yeah. Here's hoping, Frank.
They would be. Yeah. You'll be fine, Frank.
I would
share your anxiety, so I get it. Thanks for doing this, man.
Thank you, guys. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Frank Saravelli, president of hockey content for dailyfaceoff.com. Yeah.
I might be going to the Olympics too.
Yeah?
I'm starting to think about wearing a mask in the shower at this point if it means 21 days of isolation if you test positive.
Yeah, honestly, I'm at a point in my life where I've been double vaccinated and I'll be getting my booster as soon as humanly possible, that my fear of getting severely ill I don't have that fear. And if you do, hopefully one day you can get beyond that and hopefully we're at a place where that's not an issue. But for me, I don't fear getting ill. What I would fear, though, is being
that
told you have to stay in China for 3 weeks as everybody else waves goodbye, and you're in a place...
But there is Wi-Fi.
That has Wi-Fi so you can watch Netflix, but we don't know the speed. Here's what you can't do. Access Twitter with the Wi-Fi that they're giving to you in China. Yeah, that's... If I was an NHL player... And I know if you're Connor McDavid, you want to play in the Olympics for the first time in your entire career. You want to wear that maple leaf at the Olympics and win a gold medal for your country for the first time ever. And what a highlight of your career that could be. And maybe it's not a 50-50 proposition now, but we're getting closer to that, if not beyond it, that I would want this decision taken out of my hands at some point. Like if the cases rise, if we get another wave going through the NHL, and we've already seen games postponed.
But I do know, here's the issue. Okay, the decision out of their hands, by whom?
The NHL.
The NHL wants nothing to do with their players going over there.
Of course, and there is a drop-dead date of January 10th.
But it means a lot to the players that they do want to go.
Mm-hmm.
So the decision ultimately is still in their hands.
Yeah. But I don't think they want to come out and tell the world that, you know, it's them that's canceling this thing. They would love for the Shield to be, hey, and maybe it's a conversation that happens, or maybe it's just in concert, you know, that we've both decided. I mean, it would be quite revelatory to see the players and the league come forward and do something collaborative, but... Hey, listen, I live in a Pollyanna world in my brain, and maybe that's something that they could just step forward and say, hey, we're not necessarily afraid of getting sick here, but this is a bad thing, and we don't want to disrupt the season, and we know we want to go back to the Olympics, and we will in 4 years, but this is not just not the time because of the potential COVID protocols, but they could also use the Shield of it being the correct decision from a human rights standpoint and maybe put that stamp on it would help. Would we throw that spin on it? Makes it a little more palatable for people who don't have to think about the idea like Frank does of going to China and maybe being stuck in a room for 3 weeks.
I wonder how far down the road some of these players have thought about that.
Yeah.
Or have they just thought about, I want to go to the Olympics and I want to win another gold medal. Or I want to win a gold medal.
Mm-hmm.
Because for some of these players, this means a lot. But I wonder just how knowledgeable they are on all the ramifications if something goes wrong, because they're just so wired to be in a North American environment.
Sure. Yeah. And testing positive here is no joke, and you got to quarantine and being away from your teammates and all that is, yeah. I would hope that they've been educated on the subject, and we know that they desperately want to go. That was, you know, it's a major negotiating point in CBA conversations between the league and its players. The players want to go.
Mm-hmm.
But at a certain point, there has to be a breaking point or a risk where it's unpalatable. And maybe we're not there yet. But yeah, I wouldn't want to be stuck in China with a government that perhaps is not that trustworthy when they're responsible for your safety, especially if you're not a Chinese citizen.
And think about what an Olympics are. You're in an athlete's village. You're in locker rooms.
Yeah.
You're on shuttles. You're in cafeterias. And it's winter. It's not like you're outside and can kind of mill about and all those things. It's everything you're not supposed to do is what the Olympics actually are.
Yep. When we come back, Bills Pats, we'll talk to John Scott, Bills beat reporter, next. The Fan Drive Time continues. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.